Acts 12. We have a prayer meeting on Tuesday night at 7:15, and I'd like you to come and join me if you can. And hopefully you'll see why I think prayer is so important, even though it's not my area of strength. I'm not a great prayer. You know, it's not why I sit hours at home going, you know, I try to pray, but like yourself, you know, occasionally I fall asleep. Have you ever prayed and fall asleep, God? Shows of hands. Anyone pray? There you go. You see, we're a bit more honest. There you go. It's funny. The pastor does it as well. It's okay. It's fine. During World War II, they had a challenge where they said, your country needs you. Remember the little big posters they used to have? Your country needs you. What it was getting at was, it's not just the people fighting on the front. It's everybody needs to pull together to give support. Okay? And what they were saying was, you need to give support and you need to do your part. Well, we've got Herod Agrippa I, and he is in charge of the whole area. After Herod the Great, the whole area was split into various places, but Herod Agrippa I retook it and was the king over the whole area again. Very powerful person. And in a way to try and please the Jewish people, he decided now that these Christians had accepted Gentiles in, now that they'd stepped away from the Jewish faith and very much differentiated themselves, now is the time to try and bolster his own ratings by persecuting what we now know as the Christian church. So he takes James, the brother of John, James, John, and Peter, the three disciples closest to Jesus, so one of the three leadership of the church, and takes him and executes him. So bolstered by that action, and so positive was the response by the Jewish people towards him, accepting of who he was, that he thinks, right, I'll do that again. I'll call Peter. Now, you may ask, why was James allowed to die, but Peter released? And it's a good question. And the only answer I've got is the fact that Jesus told that these were things were going to happen. James and John with their mother had asked for thrones, but Jesus made it clear that there could be no glory apart from suffering. Are you able to drink the cup that I shall drink of and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with? Their bold reply was, we are able. Matthew 20:22. And so God took him at his word. So the second of the three is now in jail. And what we start to see is spiritual warfare, community in action. Spiritual warfare is real. We're facing a demonic enemy. We're facing Satan. He's the ultimate person. He very, very rarely directly reveals himself. He'll reveal himself through his minions who work for him, angels which are fallen. Or most likely he'll work through people who are just committed to his own ends, whether they're aware of it or not. And Agrippa was one of those such people. And so the response to that for all believers is to aim in warfare. And just like World War II, your kingdom, your realm needs you. We can get involved. We can make a difference. And so what we see is when Peter's taken, the community of faith gathers in the mother of John Mark's house, and they start to pray. And we're told that this happens around the Passover time. So they could have been, we're not exactly sure the exact time in that Passover when he's taken, but they could have been there for up to 7 days praying prior to these actions taking place. But they got together and they prayed, and their prayers made a difference. So you'll remember, Peter was arrested before. Earlier in the book of Acts, probably about 14 years previously, time-wise, very early after the resurrection of Jesus, they went and preached, and they went and preached in the temple, and they were arrested. And the next day, the Sanhedrin came to discuss it and found out they were actually all out there preaching again because somehow they'd escaped from prison. Not this time. We're going to put 16 guards on them, four shifts of four. We're going to have two outside, and we're going to have two chained to this guy, so he's not getting away this time. Right. The people are praying, but earnestly in prayer. We know that because the chapter tells us how he goes and joins the prayer meeting. Peter's soundly asleep. He's very much at peace with what's going on. Jesus said to Peter, in John 21 it's recorded, "I tell you the truth, when you were young, you were able to do as you liked. You dressed yourself and went wherever you wanted to go. But when you are old, you'll stretch out your hands, and others will dress you and take you where you don't want to go." Jesus said this to him to let him know by what kind of death he would glorify God. Then Jesus told him, "Follow me." Physically, at this point of time, Peter's not classified as an old man. He isn't going to die because Jesus told him when he would die. In 1 Peter 3:2, it says, "For the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open unto their prayers, but the face of the Lord is against them that do evil." You can just see, as he's penning these words, I remember that time where I was locked and chained, but God knew he had a purpose and a plan still for me, and therefore all these things came to pass. So as we read those, "For the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open unto their prayers, but the face of the Lord is against them that do evil," we can see this very chapter in his mind. He's resting on the prayers of others. He's resting and he's confident in who he is within Christ. So he's asleep. So an angel appears, so deeply asleep that even with the bright light and the shining, which obviously the guards weren't aware of, he has to tap him to wake him up. "Put on your clothes and sandals. Wrap your cloak around you and follow me," says the angels. Exodus 12:11 records this. "This is how you are to eat the Passover, with your cloak tucked into your belt and your sandals on your feet and your staff in your hand. Eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover." During the Passover time, they were meant to prepare themselves by wearing a cloak and putting on their sandals. They were ready to go do the Lord's business. As they were done, they were have the angel of the Lord would pass over them because they were obedient. When they were taken out, an angel of the Lord went ahead of them and led them where they were going. And here we see Peter, the leader of the church, trapped in bondage, held by a king, hell-bent on trying to destroy them. And an angel appears and says, "During this time when people are expecting you to die, this angel will pass over you. Put on your sandals, put on your cloak. We're going places. Follow me." Peter thinks it's a dream. He thinks it's a dream when he passes the first guard, the second guard. He thinks it's a dream until the door, the gate, magically unlocks all by itself and he wanders through and then he suddenly goes, "Whoa, it's not a dream." And the angel disappears. And so he heads off to where he knows. He knows they'll be gathered. Isn't that good? You know your community of faith so well. He knows, "I know where they're going to be." And so he heads off to the house, where we first find the people of prayer in supplication to the Lord. "Bring back Peter for us. We need Peter at this time." James writes in James 5, 16 to 20, "Therefore confess your sins to each other and pray for each other so that you may be healed. The prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective." He goes on to give an illustration. Elijah was a human being, even as we are. He prayed earnestly that it would not rain, and it did not rain on the land for 3.5 years. Then he prayed, and the heavens gave rain, and the earth produced its crops. My brothers and sisters, if one of you should wander from the truth, or someone should bring that person back, remember this: whoever turns a sinner from the error of their ways will save them from death and cover over a multitude of sins. It's unlikely that you and I, in this present day and present age in Altona, within Australia, at this time, it's unlikely any one of us would be taken and placed physically in prison. It does happen around the world. There are pastors, there are people who believe, and they're in prison. But it's unlikely at this time for you and I. But what James tells us is that there's plenty of people who've been taken prisoner by going backwards from what the truth they knew and falling into sinful situations. Prodigals. Prodigals who should know the truth, who've been told the truth, but we weep for them because we see them not living the fullness of the life we know that they have available to them in the freedom of the gospel. And what this tells us in James is keep praying for them, because the prayers of righteous people avail much, and those prodigals can return. So whilst I don't necessarily expect us to gather on Tuesday night and start praying for people in physical chains to be released, I do expect us to be saying, this person knows the truth, but they're not walking in the fullness of it. Lord, let them see that way. Let those prodigals come home. Because James tells us that the power of a righteous person, the prayers of a righteous person, avail much. That's you and I. So just as they gathered to set freedom for Peter, so we have the same authority and power to set people free. Well, he turns up, and encouraging for all of us probably, because sometimes you might have prayed, and you kind of go, oh, I'm praying, but really in your heart, you're not sure that God's ever going to act or do on that. And here we got this huge prayer session, which could have been going on for 6 days. Please, Lord, free Peter. And there's a knock on the door. Now, the first thing is, it could be people coming to take you away. So when Rhoda goes up to knock on and answer the door, she's a brave lady. And so Peter's on the other side of the door. It's Peter. Peter? No, it's not Peter. Doesn't believe him. Goes and tells them, no, it can't be right. 6 or 7 days they may be praying, and eventually there's an answer to prayer standing on their doorstep, and they don't believe it. Did they really believe that God was going to answer the prayers? Were they just doing that to come for one another? There's all sorts of theological things you could think of, and the only reason I raise it is because there's going to be times when you're going to pray, and your faith, as you think it there, will not necessarily be there, but that's okay, because God says, I'll give you the words, I'll encourage you even when you didn't believe, because I know who you are. Keep praying. And so they are marveled. They are marveled that Peter is released, and he comes and tells them, I'm released. And he gives them, and he says, give this message to James. Now, the James he's talking about this time is the brother of Jesus, because obviously the brother of James and John has been killed. James, the brother of Jesus, becomes one of the most influential people, writes one of the books, becomes a leader of the people. So he says, let the others know. But there's an interesting purpose here. James wasn't there. In fact, the way he designates it, none of the senior leadership, so to speak, were there. And you might think to yourself, what's he playing at? You think if Peter was there, at least James could turn up. Well, you know, Peter is so surrendered to the purpose of what God would have him do that he's well aware that others have a job to do and other purposes, which doesn't necessarily all revolve around him. Because it's not all about us, is it? Peter, who's walked most closely with Jesus, has grown so much that he knows others have other purposes to do whilst he's been sitting in jail. And that's perfectly okay. Not only does Peter wander off, he actually wanders off from the pages of history, really. We only meet him once more in Acts. That's in chapter 15. We know about his writings later. But actually what he gets up to and does, we've no idea. Historically, people believe that he died in Rome, but that's not proven. The idea is, according to what Jesus did, that someone will take you and stretch out your hands as he was crucified, but there's no definitive recording of it. The person we followed so deeply for so long, effectively, with the exception of one occasion, disappears into the night. So, we see spiritual warfare in action. We see those who've been involved in it for so long demonstrating peace. We see the power of prayer. And we see those who are involved surrendered to the purpose of God. But just a few practical things for us. First of all, persecution and suffering is to be expected. Not necessarily welcomed, by the way, but expected. Which is often why you will find me praying, giving thanks for the Lord that we are in peace and that we can meet in freedom. Because that is not necessarily the way it's always going to be. And it definitely is not for lots of believers around the world. The early church, in fact, up until 312 AD, so for close to 300 years, the early church suffered persecutions at one level or another. Sometimes horrific, sometimes mild. Today, all around the world, many believers are targeted and held for their faith, persecuted because they believe in Jesus Christ. And just like in World War II, where your country needs you, you and I have our bit to do. Very much so, as you've listened to testimonies about World War II, they talk about, well, I might be producing the munitions for the troops to use, but I'm doing my bit. And without my bit, they couldn't do their frontline job. And we've talked about at least three people who are doing cross-cultural work so far in today's service. But they can't do what they're doing without us backing them up. I'm not expecting you to go around making physical munitions. I am expecting us to be in prayer for those people. You might not be available to get to help the Mother's Club and reach out to the kids on Friday morning, but you can pray for them. We have a kids' club in the afternoon, and you might not be very good at talking to kids, but that's okay. You can pray for them. The cycle group meets on Saturday faithfully, and it's welcoming to anybody who wants to come along. You might be lousy at cycling, but you can pray for them. Do you get where I'm going with this? Find out what ministries people are doing. David, for some insane reason, likes climbing mountains, and he's going up yet again to some obscene height. But he's taking a stack of people who don't know the Lord. I mean, pray for him for his safety anyway. That's a good thing to start with. But also, pray. That's an opportunity to speak to people. Pray for people. Because our prayers make a difference because we're doing spiritual warfare. But also it allows us to join in the fight. So, just as we have this quote in World War II that your country needs you, we are in the battle for the kingdom of God. And your kingdom needs you. may I encourage you to join us on Tuesday. Whether you can physically make it, that'd be great. But if not, join us during that time. Join us during the week. And let's pray that we see God's kingdom come. Thank you.